Wine is unlike anything else that I can think of.
Sometimes with all the glitz and glamour of Napa, we forget this whole thing is based on families growing grapes, you know?
Potentially, this is a fantastic year, but anything can change on a dime, right?
And everything's good in life, you just have to make a natural judgment, not be too tricky in your mind. I like it, I don't like it.
Davis himself thinks that it's kind of a big load of hooey. People probably use more than maybe two or three descriptors for a wine. He just thinks they're just making it up.
I kind of fired myself. I mean, I couldn't be a one-man operation forever.
There's always something to do. There's replanting, there's barrels, there's maintenance.
Because so many people use mobile bottling lines right now, and everything has to come, the labels, the corks, everything has to come together at the same time and be there when the truck shows up.
Being able to grow up in wine, you have this passion and love for wine and the culture of wine, and everything else sort of pales in comparison.
We say, so drink the wine. That's kind of our motto here at Life Between the Vines. One of the cool things about wine, besides drinking it, is the people you drink it with. And the stories you hear and tell with wine all come together to make every bottle unique. Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle.
And welcome to podcast number 240. This week we feature Tim Duval of John Duval Wines in the Barossa Valley, Australia.
This podcast is sponsored by Release Winery. Every wine tells a story. Each growing season, it's our goal to create an artisan Napa Valley wine of exceptional quality. Join us as the story of this ultra-limited wine continues. Learn more at releasewinery.com.
Continuing with our series of interviews with Australian winemakers, this week we feature Tim Duval of John Duval Wines from the Barossa Valley. As part of the Australia Up Close event, we were able to taste many excellent wines from this amazing country. For Tim, traveling the States gives him a chance to meet some of these folks that they sell to, and even sneak in an evening at Wrigley Field for a Cubs game. Not bad for a cricket fan. I'm here with Tim Duval of John Duval Winery from Australia. How are you doing, Tim?
Very good, thanks, Ray. Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here in Chicago. Yeah, my first time, and caught the Cubs game last night, so I'm settling in well.
How'd they do last night?
7-6 to the good, so it was a pretty good first baseball game to go to, yeah.
So you've never been to a baseball game ever?
Never been to a baseball game, so I thought, why not go to Wrigley Field and suck in the atmosphere.
Is cricket more dominant down in Australia?
Cricket is way more dominant, yeah. So pretty much Australian rules football dominates in the winter and then cricket in the summer. And then soccer is increasingly more popular as well. So
what do you think of baseball?
I love baseball. I'm a cricket fan. So that kind of build up of strategy and build up of momentum in the game is something that was pretty good fun. And everyone was getting into it. They saw lots of hits. So it was good, yeah.
And it's a nice old ballpark.
Yeah, lovely character, lots of greenery. Yeah, it was just, I think, one of those events that I really wanted to tick off, and I ticked now.
Cool, very nice. I'm just excited at the thought that this is your first trip to the United States. How long are you going to be here?
I'm flying out from Boston on Saturday. So I had a bit of time in Vancouver and in Calgary to begin with. And then, yeah, we've been doing the five cities with Wine Australia. So I started off in L.A., then we went to Dallas and today Chicago. And then following Chicago, we've got New York and then Boston. So hopefully a good snapshot across the States. So.
Oh, yeah. And hopefully a good night's sleep after all that.
I think I'll be sleeping pretty well on the plane.
I would think so. How long's that trip for?
It was about 12 hours from Auckland to Vancouver and about 4 hours from Adelaide to Auckland on the way over here. So probably about 16 hours round trip. So.
I guess it could be worse.
Could be worse, yeah.
So any particular impressions as you come into the city, into Chicago? I mean, it's an impressive city for sure.
Yeah.
Any thoughts?
Well, there's just lots of restaurants, lots of shops. I'm staying at the Roby, not too far from here, and it's just littered with lots of cool cafes. It seems like a wine culture built in that area. So far I'm pretty impressed and looking forward to having some good meals and some nice wine here too.
A lot of wine here in Chicago. Great market for wine. So welcome to America. Really a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you.
I guess really above all else, we're here to talk about wine.
Looking forward to that too. Yeah.
Well, Australian wines for many people can be a bit of a mystery. And of course,
some years ago when there was such a big boom, many people had the time to learn about them. Tell me about the wines that you guys are making at John Duval.
Sure. So we're a small family-run business, but there is a backstory to the whole John Duval wines, and that begins in 1974, where my father, John, who's the winemaker at John Duval Wines, he finished his winemaking degree at Roseworthy in Adelaide, and then first job, first interview of his life was with Penfolds, so quite a famous winery from the Barossa. Started, I think, in the 1840s. First job with Penfolds. So fast forward 29 years later, 16 of those where he was the chief winemaker for Penfolds, responsible for Grange, 707, and all the Penfolds classics, he decided it was time to get back in the winery, back in the vineyard on a more intricate level, and so started our own family winery, John Duval Wines. So that was in 2003. And we started with one wine, which was a Shiraz Grenache Mourvèdre blend from pretty old vines called Plexus. So that was the beginning of the John Duval Wines family story. And we've been introducing wines ever since then. So we've got five wines now, a straight Shiraz called Entity, which the first vintage was 2004, a Vineyard Selection Best of Vintage Shiraz called Aligo, a white wine, a Marsan Roussan Viognier, Plexus White, that we introduced in 2010. And lastly, a straight Grenache from a really ancient vineyard, which we call Annexus. So we're a pretty focused, tight range, but I guess focused on quality and finding the right vineyards within the Barossa and Eden Valleys.
Sure. I want to come back to the idea of family, but just to go back for a second, Mourvèdre, not something I know very commonly grown in Australia, or is it?
It is quite widely grown. Yeah, we often quite commonly call it Mataro in the Barossa as well. So originally in the Barossa, it was planted and used as a fortified variety. So Shiraz, Grenache, Mourvèdre, Mataro. So we've amazing old vine resources in the valley. We think that we've got the oldest Shiraz, Grenache and Mourvèdre vines in the world planted in the Barossa Valley. We avoided phylloxera. So we've got these amazing old vines on their original roots. And Mourvèdre, we love working with it. It's got a lovely savoury brooding character to its wines. So we think that works particularly well with Shiraz and Grenache. Hence why when Dad left Penfolds and started our own winery, the first wine that he did was that style of blend.
Yeah. Have you ever considered 100% Mourvèdre at all?
It may be in the wings. The 17 vintage we've just finished about a month ago now. It was a little bit cooler, quite an elegant year, we're thinking, and the Mourvèdre looked pretty amazing. We've got a 115-year-old vineyard we're very lucky to have access to, and we're going to wait and see how it shapes up after it's had a bit of time in barrel, but we're pretty excited that we might release a straight Mourvèdre.
It's a purely selfish question because I'm a huge fan of Mourvèdre.
Sure.
And one of the reasons I didn't know that is because of the other name. I'd heard of it before and I forgot what the name was.
Yeah.
What was the other name?
Mataro.
Mataro, that's
yeah.
It.
Yeah, and it's a very Barossa thing to call your wine a Mataro if it's using that variety.
True.
Probably easier to say too.
Mourvèdre is one that everybody mispronounces. Yes, it's very easy to do that. Exactly. It's an exciting grape, and I think anytime people discover new wines, it's such a thrill to watch them learn about something when they just step out of the normal, whether it be Chardonnay or Cabernet, that kind of a thing.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the nice stories that's coming out of the Barossa at the moment is celebration of other varietals. Obviously, Shiraz is the best known variety coming out of Barossa and Australia, probably as a general blanket statement. But the opportunity to work with these amazing Grenache and Mourvèdre vineyards and to celebrate those styles in a serious way, not just blending them away and getting lost sometimes in other Shiraz dominant blends. So yeah, we're really excited to champion these resources that we've got and to start telling those other stories from the Barossa that perhaps other people hadn't heard as much.
And that's the thing, learning about the area, it's so fascinating. Australia is just, it's such a big country.
Yes.
And so much great wine coming from there. I'm going to go back to the family thing, though.
Sure.
So you have your dad.
Yes.
And, of course, there's you. Who else in the family is involved?
Yeah, so there's Dad, Mum, who was the inspiration for the white Plexus because we never had enough white wine around the house, so that was pretty quickly added to the portfolio. Mum's a teacher in the Barossa Valley, so a nice leveling point for us sometimes when we get caught away in the world of wine to have somebody who deals with, you know, people problems and
sure,
that
yeah.
kind of challenging education. So that's nice, brings some roundness to the family. And I've got two other brothers. I'm the eldest of three. My brother Ben lives and works in Melbourne, so on the east coast of Australia, running a small wine shop and a craft beer-focused bar. So he's quite into craft brewing and that kind of scene. Loves wine, makes a little side project wine as part of the venue he works at. And my youngest brother Johnny is an architect in Adelaide, but I guess all of us growing up in the Barossa having an affinity and a connection with the wine industry have worked selling wine through university, and we've done some vintage time as well. So it's pretty hard to stay away from the wine game, I think.
I can't even imagine.
Yeah.
So because your dad was in the business, was that what drew you to it, or did you have your own love of wine?
Yeah, well, growing up, dad was working for Penfolds when I was growing up. So obviously they're a large winery. We weren't at the winery every day like we might have been if it had been our own family-owned winery at the time. So, you know, I spent some time wandering around the cellars at McGill and Newry and, you know, checking in what dad was doing, because obviously it's a pretty fascinating subject when you're a youngster too, with, you know, agricultural business, grapes, wine, it's a lot of fun. So, yeah, why I might not have grown up in the winery, I guess what really turned my attention to wine was when I went to university and started working in wine retail, and started to kind of learn that I'd actually picked up quite a bit over the years growing up, but I might not have realised it. Going to tastings, talking to people about wine, starting to develop my own interest and my own palate, I think that helped to solidify the education, if you like, that my dad had been giving us growing up.
Your vocabulary would be almost natural, even having any casual conversations with your dad about wine. You would just pick up so much more than the average person.
Yeah, I guess you absorb a lot without necessarily realizing it. And then when you go back to start learning your own journey, you do realize these things that you kind of just assumed everybody knew or was normal that are part of growing up in a region that's heavily focused on wine. Yeah. And then I guess on top of that, I took a break from wine, I guess, when I was going through university. I studied commerce and law and actually practiced as a lawyer for 7 years in Adelaide.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So my journey to get to work with a family business, I took a few little side paths.
Oh, it's a little one being
yeah.
a lawyer. Yeah.
So, but my law practice was built on wine as well. So I focused on front-end commercial work, but working for wineries, for farmers, for agribusinesses, restaurants, hotels. So yeah, there was, I think in the back of my mind, I thought I might always end up working back in the industry. So those skills that I developed over 7 years working in law, I think are useful to bring something different back to the family business. I've got a lot to learn, and it's an exciting journey to go through the wine production side. But to have a few commercial skills, I think, is useful for dad as well.
Sure. Well, it never hurts to have a lawyer in the family.
Yeah. We'll try and avoid any disputes, but
right, exactly.
Everything's a negotiation when you're dealing with growers, you're dealing with packaging, bottling. It's nice to bring something different to the table.
Sure. Yeah, the only better step you could have done is if you became a doctor and then became a winemaker.
A few have done that, haven't they?
Oh, it's amazing. Have you spent time as a cellar rat?
Yeah. When I was finishing off university, I took a break before I finished my law degree and spent time in the cellar at a winery in Victoria. So I got out of my own region, went to the Yarra Valley, and really enjoyed working harvest there, getting your hands dirty, doing everything from being at the crusher to hand plunging open fermenters to doing barrel work. So I really enjoyed that. And then the last two vintages I've been involved in the production side with dad. So every vineyard that he's been in, I've been tasting with him. Every ferment I've been tasting with him as well. So learning from the ground up. And I'd really like to expand that that knowledge as well, and perhaps do some travel and get some vintages under the belt overseas to keep expanding the my knowledge as well.
Sure. So as we go, is it sales you're headed toward or just simply sort of taking the reins eventually?
Yeah, well, I guess as a family business, you kind of roll up your sleeves and do a bit of everything. So I don't know whether I'm going to, at this stage, whether I'm going to take over or attempt to take over from my dad in the winemaking.
That almost sounds like it's a hostile takeover.
It's a very organic process. I'm learning as we go, and we keep having conversations together as a family about the direction in the next few years. So at the moment, I'm learning as much as I can. I'm trying to learn as much as I can in the winemaking side of things as well. And then we'll reassess in a few years' time about how we're going to move forward in that sense. But,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you once again, I'm going to call this a dumb question, but back to your dad's days when he was at Penfolds, did you Happen to have a couple bottles of Grange laying around the house from time to time?
There was a few bottles, yeah. I think the biggest memories I've got of drinking Grange are probably at you know, birthdays, celebrating my brother's birthdays or someone's birthday in the family. So I'm a 1982 vintage. My brother's an 84, and Johnny, my other brother's an 86. So Johnny was the pick of those three vintages, being the 86. So I've got some really nice memories of opening and drinking and sharing family some great 86 Grange. And we even actually opened a bottle of 1990 just before I left, celebrating a colleague who'd been working with Dad for 8 years in our family business. She was leaving, so we opened a 90 Grange, which was a very seminal vintage for Penfolds. It was the Spectator number one wine. And yeah, an amazing experience to try Grange with some age on it and to see the evolution of the wine. And I think that's something that when you try those wines as young wines, they're obviously big structural, muscular styles, but they really do fine down when they've got some cellaring. And you can see why they're known as some of the great wines of the world.
Sure. And what a nice tribute to your friend to be able to crack a bottle like that.
Absolutely. And it was a real privilege and pleasure for me to drink and to share within our close friends and family.
I was talking to you before the interview, and I was asking you to think about, you know, the wine industry is both a lot of fun and also can be very dangerous. It can be a little silly, crazy, weird things happen. In Australia, while California certainly has its share of rattlesnakes and, you know, mountain lions wandering around, Australia is a little more severe in that regard in terms of what you have. But any crazy stories you can think of from the cellar or in the vineyards?
Yeah, I guess it's interesting to think about the Barossa and the changes that have been going on there. There's certainly a lot more experimentation going on in the Barossa than there probably was 15 years ago in the winery.
What kind of experimentation are you thinking about?
Okay, I guess in terms of different winemaking techniques, there's a lot more hole bunching going on, a bit of cab mac. I think guys are experimenting and trying to talk to the place that we're from rather than dominating perhaps with more new oak and with over-extraction. So there's a lot of excitement coming out of the valley at the moment with guys experimenting and doing things that probably you wouldn't associate with the classic style. So,
I sidetracked you there too, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Yeah, so there's lots of interesting things going on, and we're part of a collective cellar door in the Barossa with five other small producers called Artisans of the Barossa, which means that we get to develop some really close relationships with some other winemakers. And so we like to hold lots of crazy events and travel together and celebrate a little cluster of winemakers within the valley. So that's led to a lot of fun times, showing a lot of events. There's an event that's going on at the moment in Australia called Game of Thrones, where everybody dresses up in Game of Thrones costumes, pours their wine, celebrates our region against other regions. So will Barossa reign supreme against McLaren Vale in a Grenache off or things like that. So yeah, I think it's exciting time to be telling the Barossa story. And I think Wine Australia, to their credit, are speaking about the diversity of styles going on in Australia at the moment. And the fun that we're having in doing these events, like the Game of Thrones, like the up-close tastings, is something that I would definitely want to encourage Wine Australia to keep pushing.
It's also the idea of reintroducing the United States to these great wines that come from Australia. And not only that, but they're a great value.
Absolutely, yeah. I think when you can have access to some of the oldest vineyards in the world and still be charging a very fair price, in my view, there's history in a glass. A great story for us to tell and a great journey for people to taste Australian wine and think that New World can be old school.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. About how many cases are you doing?
We're about 7,000 cases total production. Yeah, for the world. So we like to keep probably about 50% of that for the domestic market and then share with our friends around the world, I guess in probably five main markets, the States and Canada, the UK, Hong Kong and China, Switzerland, and then we spread about sort of 20 other small countries, just small amounts, keeping our friends around the world happy, yeah.
Great job being able to get out there and, you know, promote your products and Australian wine to the world.
Yeah, well, I guess coming back from the Penfolds days, Dad had the opportunity to travel a lot and not just talk about Penfolds wines, but be an ambassador for Australian wines as well. And so I think that philosophy is flowing through in our own family business now, in that we obviously want to talk about our own wines, but also about the Australian category. So if you like, we'd encourage more suppliers to get over in country and tell their stories and show America and the rest of the world the amazing styles that are coming out of the valley that you know, might not be the big producers that have traditionally come across to the States. So yeah, if there's one message to the guys at home, get out here, guys, pound some pavement, open some bottles.
Yeah, that's what turns people onto the wine, and that idea of getting to meet you, which is so much fun. I'm just enjoying chatting with you here, which is, you know, it's a rare opportunity because we obviously don't get to go to Australia. For our listeners who'd like to learn about Duval Wines, how would they do that? Online.
Yeah, absolutely. So our importer into the States is Old Bridge Cellars. So you can jump on the Old Bridge Cellars website and check out their portfolio. We've also got our own website, www.johndevalwines.com, where we've got an extensive history of the winery, tasting notes for all the vintages that we've produced, a bit of background on John, his bio, and information about what we're doing and exciting things coming up with John DeVal Wines. So, yeah. Get on, follow us on Instagram at John DeVal Wines and Twitter and Facebook as well.
Well, and hopefully we'll see you back in the States here someday.
Absolutely. This is my first visit here. I'm sure it won't be the last. It's it's a big country. As we say, Australia is a big country as well. The diversity across the States, I'm sure, is going to blow me away as well.
Yeah, it's a little different around here. Sorry, I'm not going to go there with that. Tim, thanks for taking the time. I know you're going to be busy with this tasting here, and I'll get to chat with you a little bit later. But safe travels back home and enjoy your time in the States.
Thanks very much, Ray. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Learn more by visiting johndevalwines.com.
This podcast is sponsored by Release Winery. Every wine tells a story. Each growing season, it's our goal to create an artisan Napa Valley wine of exceptional quality. Join us as the story of this ultra-limited wine continues. Learn more at releasewinery.com.
Thanks for listening, and remember to like us on Facebook. Also, check out our YouTube channel.
Life Between the Vines is produced at Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Theme song and original music written and recorded by Tim Dondarevo. Our host is Kay Paskoff. Web design by Jenny Holland. Our graphics and website specialist is Lawton Hall. Our web geek is Dan Gieschen. Photos by Jeanette Herniak. Copyright 2017.